presenting Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves.
CX-4 calling control tower. CX-4 calling control tower. Standing by.
Control tower, back to CX-4. Wind southeast, ceiling 1200. All clear.
Okay, this is Hop Harrigan coming in.
Yes, it's America's ace of the airways coming in for another transcribed episode in the adventures of Hop Harrigan.
Gang, I want you to meet the first girl to work her way around the world. She's Miss Alice Lemieux, one of Pan American Airways' chief stewardesses, who just recently returned from the first round-the-world passenger flight. Alice, how did you happen to be chosen to make that historic flight? Is it because you're pretty as a picture?
Thanks for the compliment, Glenn, but these days airline hostesses have to be more than pretty.
It helps, though, doesn't it?
Yes, I suppose so, except in Tokyo.
Oh, I don't get that.
Well, when we landed in Tokyo, the famous passengers on board the plane were supposed to be greeted by top-ranking army generals. Everything was going along fine until I made the mistake of stepping out on the field.
Well, why was it a mistake?
Well, about 1,000 homesick GIs had come down to see the plane land, and when they saw me, they whistled so loud no one could hear what the generals were saying.
Making you not only the first girl to work her way around the world, but the first girl responsible for GIs drowning out a general. How many flights have you taken with Pan Am, Alice?
About 50 transatlantic crossings in the last 18 months.
That's a lot of air travel.
It's a lot of walking, too.
Walking? Afraid I don't understand. Uh-oh, I see it's time for today's Hop Harrigan episode. But don't go away, Alice. I still want to know what you mean by walking. And I'm sure a lot of our girl listeners would like some inside dope on how to become an airline hostess.
I'll be back at the end of the program, Glenn.
Okay, we'll be looking forward to it. You heard that, gang, so keep listening. And now to our story. Intrigued by the report that two airline pilots had been attacked by wartime enemy fighter planes, and anxious to help their friend, Paul Conroy, part owner of the airline, Hop and Tank left Lakeville with him and flew south to New Orleans. There they saw concrete evidence of what was happening. Afraid of the mysterious ghost-like fighters, Conroy's pilots refused to take a cargo flight on its scheduled night run, whereupon Hop and Tank immediately volunteered their services, hoping to see the fighters for themselves. As we continue now, the heavily laden DC-3 is 2 hours out, holding a steady course northeastward toward its destination, Richmond, Virginia. The flight thus far has been smooth and uneventful.
What did you say, Tank?
A lot of hokum. Them guys must have dreamed up them enemy fighters.
Why do you say that?
Listen, Conroy, we've been flying for more than 2 hours now. What's happened?
Nothing.
This is a milk run.
Well, we still have 3.5 hours to go, fellas. Plenty of time to run into trouble.
Besides, why stick your neck out asking for it?
What do you think we're making a trip for, anyhow? We want to see them messies and zeros for ourselves.
I can't help hoping we don't.
Hey, listen, Flo, one thing we never did get straight. Exactly where were they spotted? Where did your two boys see them?
Well, the first night, Frank was on a run from New Orleans to Cheyenne. He wasn't flying the air lane, and he saw it about an hour north of Oklahoma City.
And that's desert country up that way, isn't it?
Uh-huh. And last night, the Messerschmitt was spotted on a trip from Kansas City back to New Orleans, somewhere near Little Rock.
Oklahoma and Little Rock. About 300 miles apart, huh?
We're about 450 miles east of Little Rock now. Be interesting to see if they show up again.
Hey, Hop.
Huh?
Do you have any idea what they can be?
I'm afraid I'll have to see them first.
Hey, what's that?
What?
Way out, 3 o'clock and high.
Oh, yes, you see, Hop?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, maybe we'll get some action.
Relax, both of you.
What do you mean, relax?
You're getting too worked up. It's only an airline transport.
You sure?
Positive.
Oh, I'm not so sure we latched onto something.
No. No, Hop's right. Must be a transport going into Atlanta. He's holding course.
Doggone it. I wish something would happen.
His homely features twisted into a disgruntled scowl, Tank literally begs for trouble as he resumes his vigil, staring into the night sky, looking for a sign of the mysterious enemy fighters. But nothing happens. The DC-3 drones steadily northeastward, its engines humming smoothly as the propellers bite through the calm night air. Then, as Hoff concludes his radio check with the range station at Spartanburg, he stirs uneasily.
Well, things are getting a little tight.
What do you mean, tight?
There's a low-pressure area coming in from the northwest, and it's loaded.
Stars are out. The sky is like a mill pond.
That's just it. Too quiet. I don't like it. I feel like I'm sitting on a keg of dynamite.
We'll be in Richmond in a couple of hours.
Yeah, we have to cross mountain terrain first, and the Blue Ridge chain's no picnic ground with weather.
Forget it. So what if we run into a little flow? We can plow through okay.
Hey!
That's starting.
Where's it coming from? The sky's still clear.
Look down.
Uh-oh. Can't see the beacon.
Yeah, it crept in under us. Look over to the west.
Stars are gone. Stuff's rolling in thick and fast.
Did you say a little blow, Tank?
My mistake. Watch it!
Hang on. Take your belt. It's going to get a lot rougher.
I'm okay.
Paul?
He's tight. I wanted to see them ghost planes.
You'll see more than ghosts on this trip, pal.
Oh, brother, did you see that flash of lightning?
Yeah. It'd be pretty, too, if we was on the ground.
The storm is cutting in north, right across our heading.
You think we'd better find an alternate field and sit this dance out?
Tank, get on the radio and call the Spartanburg Range. Find out if anything's open.
Roger. Why don't you ease off to the east a little more, Hop? Maybe we can run around the edge of the blow.
Can't, not till I get clearance. Might fly straight into another plane's route.
Ah, no soap. Can't ever think. Too much static.
Okay, cut it.
Cut. They're up.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Hold tight and plow through. And listen, if you're on speaking terms with Lady Luck, start giving her an earful. We can use her right now.
As a blazing blue-white streak of lightning flashes across the sky directly in front of them, Hoff's face is tense, his forehead deeply lined. The storm closes in rapidly around the heavy DC-3, and as the whirling winds of many thunderheads toss the plane through the sky, the wings and fuselage groan and creak in protest. Tank and Paul Conroy sit rigid, bracing themselves as the ship bucks and plunges, listening for and yet dreading the tearing, rending sound which will signal damage to the plane's structure. But even though the fury of the storm redoubles, they wallow through the sky in a drunken dance of death. Hop manages to hold his altitude and keep his ship in the air.
Great Scott, how long can this last?
Tank, any break in the clouds?
Still piled up like a brick wall.
Can't we go any higher?
Crowding our ceiling with this load now.
Hang on.
We're going down.
Pull her out or we'll hit the mountain, sure.
Come on, baby, don't shed your wings now.
Get that stick back, will you?
Come on, nose up. Gently does it.
Yeah, we're breaking out of it.
Keep your fingers crossed
now. All the way. There.
Nice going, huh?
Hey, what's that?
Something amidships. Good Lord.
What is it, Paul?
The cargo's broken loose. It's pounding the aft bulkhead to pieces.
Then get after it, or we'll be ripped apart.
Even as Hop shouts his frantic warning, Tank and Paul Conroy leap out of their seats and dash into the cargo cabin, where two massive crates pound and smash against the rear bulkhead wall, threatening to break the plane in two. Gang, there's a startling surprise ahead, so stand by. And here back with us again is Alice Lemieux, one of Pan American Airways' chief stewardesses. Now, about that walking business, Alice, just what did you mean?
On each transatlantic clipper trip to England or Portugal, I walk approximately 11 miles up and down the aisle of the plane, seeing to it that passengers are comfortable and serving their meals. On the round-the-world flight, I must have walked 50 miles.
Well, here's hoping you never have to fly to the moon. But seriously, Alice, what does it take to become an airline stewardess? Do you need a college degree?
It helps, but you don't need one. If you haven't a college degree, you must have at least 2 years of business experience. You must be over 21, be neat, and have a pleasant personality. And, of course, you must love flying.
Well, would you advise it as a career for girls, just as Hoff advises boys to become pilots?
I certainly would. The future of aviation is almost unlimited, and anyone who starts now is bound to grow with it. Then, too, it's a wonderful opportunity to travel, to see the world, and to meet all sorts of interesting people.
Well, what about foreign languages? Do you have to know how to speak them?
Not on airlines in the United States, but you do on Pan American. As a matter of fact, one of the main reasons I was chosen for the round-the-world flight is because I speak French fluently.
Êtes-vous né en France?
Non, je suis né dans l'état du Maine, mais j'ai appris à parler français quand j'étais petite.
Translation? I asked Alice if she was born in France, and she said no, she was born in Maine, but learned French as a child. Right, Mademoiselle?
Right, monsieur.
Well, thank you so much, Alice, for being with us today, and wherever you may fly, happy landings.
Thank you very much, Glenn.
And gang, always remember, America needs flyers. And now back to our story. En route to Richmond, Virginia, in a DC-3, on what first appeared to be a routine cargo flight, Hop, Tank, and Paul Conroy have flown into a raging storm while over the dangerous Blue Ridge Mountains. Now, as the plane skids and plunges wildly, Tank and Conroy fight to secure the heavy cargo, which has broken loose and threatens to pound the plane to bits.
Paul, grab that crate before it plows through the bulkhead.
I can't reach it. I can't even stand on my feet.
Hurry up, will you? The ship's getting heavy. She's out of trim.
Can't you hold her level?
I don't know. She's riding tail heavy.
We won't have any tail if we don't tie those crates back.
Paul, look out!
Oh, murder! That was close.
Stand clear. Let me in there.
Hank, don't. If he smacks against the bulkhead...
I gotta get behind it. If I can hold her back, maybe you can snub a rope around it.
But Tank,
here, grab the rope and move when I tell you.
Please, Hank, you'll get hurt.
Stand back.
Now. Hop.
Yeah.
Keep the nose down. Tank's between the crate and the bulkhead.
Pull now. Get the rope around it, right?
Watch it. I can't keep her down.
You've got to.
Hurry up with that rope. Tank, the crate's sliding back. Get out.
I'm holding her. You get the rope around it. That's it. Once more.
There.
That ought to do it.
Now, you get out of there. That rope breaks again.
Oh, I ain't taking no chance. It's
got to
be me or the ship,
then
it's me.
So, making a human cushion of himself, Tank leans against the bulkhead and by sheer brute strength holds the crate in place. Then, as suddenly as it started, the storm begins to slacken and the ship gradually rides more and more smoothly. Finally, after 15 minutes...
Okay, relax. We're in the clear.
Thank goodness for that.
Wow. My arm's stiff. I don't think I'll ever get them down again.
Well, let me rub them for you and get the circulation going.
Yeah, I'll be okay. Just stretch a couple of times.
Well, you did a swell job. We'd have lost the whole tail section if it hadn't been for you.
Yeah, forget it. Say, you ought to get some new rations aboard.
Yeah. Just wait till I see the ground crew that service this ship. They should have checked them before we went out.
Here's the one that broke loose.
Hey, what's keeping you guys? Come on up forward.
Right with you.
Hey, Paul.
Huh?
Look at this. No wonder it couldn't haul the crates. The belt's been cut halfway through.
His hands trembling, Tank holds the webbed strap out. And in the flickering light from the overhead dome, Paul Conroy sees a clean, straight gash halfway across the width of the lashing. So what was seemingly an accident is now definitely sabotage. Just how does this new development fit into the pattern of the mysterious enemy fighters? We'll learn more in the next suspense-packed episode of The Riddle of the Ghostly Avengers. So be sure to listen. Tune in and fly with Hop Harrigan, America's Ace of the Airwaves. So long, Hop. We'll be seeing you same time, same mutual station. Hop Harrigan is a transcribed copyrighted feature appearing in All American Comics magazines.